Welcome to Education, Leadership, and Beyond, Surviving and Thriving. My name is Andrew Murata, host of the show, and excited to be live here on Facebook with you. Proud member of the Education Podcast Network, Voice of Radio Canada, or wherever you are taking in your podcast. Welcome to Education, Leadership, and Beyond. Pumped to be here. I am super excited about tonight's guest, Coach Micah Brand, a longtime friend, a fellow New Yorker here. Micah is doing great things in education. He has a long history in basketball, but is reaching beyond that now, doing great things in the school district of Middletown, New York, our rival in Port Jervis, but also on the basketball court, taking his knowledge of a lifetime of basketball. Definitely want to give a shout out to his beautiful family as well. Mrs. Brand and her wonderful children, I know they'll be watching. So, but let's get started here with today's program. The sponsor of the program is my book. We're talking hoops today with Micah. So I did want to give a shout out to Tales from the Hardwood. A lot of leadership lessons. I was a Division I basketball ref for 20 years. Did not have Micah at UMass, unfortunately. I know he would be challenging the ref in the post with that physicalness there. But a lot of great stories, but it's not a basketball book. It's a leadership book. It's a book about stories and experiences in my journey of surviving and thriving on the courts and how it translates to our roles as leaders. So that's today's sponsor. The opening concept, I got a guy from Middletown on, so I got to represent with Port Jervis here. Here's my shirt here, and you can see what it says. If you're listening on iTunes, it says, oh, yeah, Port, go Port. And this is from my friend, Mr. Burke. He's an employee at Port Jervis, but he's more than an employee at Port Jervis. He's someone that has tremendous enthusiasm. And if Micah Brand walked through the doors at Port Jervis, he would say to Micah, oh, yeah. And that's how he greets people. So I started to say to him, Mr. Burke, what is this, oh, yeah? And he said, Andrew, you got to have enthusiasm. You got to show up and represent. You got to represent. We're here in Port Jervis. I want to bring the energy. I want to bring the enthusiasm. So we got these shirts, and other kids started wanting to wear them. Other adults wanted to start wearing them, and it created some positive, contagious energy there. So I wanted to give a shout out there to Mr. Burke and certainly bringing Oh Yeah to my district. And if you're listening live, get some Oh Yeah in your life. Get some energy and get that warm greeting. So wherever you're landing tomorrow morning, it's a Thursday night tonight while we're recording this, wherever you're landing tomorrow morning, bring that enthusiasm to those you greet with an oh yeah, maybe a all right. So that's the opening concept here. But enough from me. Let's bring in the guest of the show, Coach Micah Brand, Middletown, New York, SUNY Orange. Micah, welcome to the program.
What's up, Andrew? How you doing?
Good to see you. You got a guest joining you already? You got someone coming?
No, that's upstairs. Just hear all the feet bounce there. They'll be down sooner than later.
Micah's got his team on the court at SUNY Orange, but he also has his team at home, the Brand family. Micah, welcome to the program. It's an honor to have you on, my friend.
I appreciate it. It's funny that you said, never had me. A fun fact about me is that every team I've ever played for, you would not think it, but I led in technical fouls.
The nicest guy on the planet.
Hey, listen. I didn't say much on the floor. I did not say much. I didn't really talk trash. I didn't really get into a lot of, back and forth with players and snap, but the one thing that I would open my mouth to was a referee. I'll tell you that.
I was gonna put my striped shirt on.
Hey, that might trigger me. I don't know. That might trigger some memories. I don't know.
Micah, let's start with the opening concept. You heard. I gave a little Port Jervis shout out. But you heard about my employee, Mr. Burke, with some enthusiasm. How did that story resonate with you?
Well, I'll tell you, it's always a good idea to kind of just be able to create some sort of, like you said, like a contagious, energy, something that just kind of resonates throughout the building that everybody is kind of on board with, whether it be the staff, the faculty, the students, the parents when they come in, just something that is, kind of an all call to like what you get when you come in here, and that's always something that's really positive for a school, for a building, to kind of just, there's a lot of negative kind of outside the building. And I know educators in general just want that to be like the safe place for the kids who are experiencing whatever outside, and, to be able to come in and have this unified kind of all call is really, you know, it really kind of helps a lot of people get through their day. So that's something special if you can build that.
Absolutely. And it comes with the gifts and talents of the people there. Let's start with your day job, Micah. Mm-hmm. You are a crisis behavioralist, a specialist in Middletown, New York. Tell me about your role there. Tell me about this unique position you got.
Yeah. So, you know, so I mean, by education and trade, I'm in behavior modification. I have a master's degree in applied behavior analysis, which is in the education speak is ABA. So I'm sure everybody's heard of, you know, ABA and ABA therapy, stuff like that. So that's, you know, kind of behavior modification. I've held that a few roles. I've held that role in a few different places, but here in Middletown, more specifically, my role on paper is crisis interventionist. But what I've done was able to be kind of, you know, morph that into something a little bit more proactive, and that's why I always kind of lead with social emotional learning specialist / crisis intervention, because I'm all about like the proactive. You know, if we can get out and build the relationships with the kids beforehand, letting them know that, you know, we're all going to have some troubles. You know, emotions are fine. Feelings are fine. You can be mad. You can be sad. You can be all these things. But here's how we cope with that and how we manage that. You know, then that those crises, you know, can be handled a little bit more easily, you know, because they know that they can trust you and you know that you can trust them, you know, so to do their part and vice versa, you know. So that's kind of how I spend my day, you know, in Carter Elementary.
Mike, it is going to be kids in crisis in every school in America tomorrow morning. What are some strategies, right? I hear a kid screaming and yelling in the hallway, punching the locker. I come walking up. Give me a couple strategies that I could use to maybe help diffuse that situation.
You know, first thing, I mean, I always approach with patience, because, you know, obviously you want to be able to diffuse this as quickly as possible, but regardless of what you want, there is a timetable that this is going to be, right? And I think that the more patience you have, the quicker it gets. You know, the kids are already in some emotional state, right, that they're elevated to this point, that they're, you know, violently outbursting like this. And so if they can kind of sense your energy, and, you know, they see that you're giving them time. You're not trying to talk over them, or you're not trying to yell at them. You're not trying to force them to do anything. You know, you're just kind of giving them a second, as loud as it may be, as disruptive as it may be. You have to be able to just give them a second before we can take it from here and move it over there, before we can start a dialogue, you know, something. So I think the patience is always first and foremost. And then after that, you kind of have to just see the kid for who they are. You know, you have to kind of meet them where they are. What works for this one isn't going to work for that one, you know. So I think that's a big thing, is just about really, you know, building those relationships with the kids prior, so that, you know, when I approach this student, there's a certain avenue that I'm going to take to help him or her get through this. You know what I mean? I think those are the two biggest things of, you know, number one, patience, and number two, really having that proactive relationship to know, like, okay, how am I going to really be able to get through to this student?
If you're watching the show, you see Micah here. If you're listening, you don't get to see him, but you hear him. Micah is a giant man. You know, I 6'7", 6'8",
6'11", babe. 6'11". Don't short me. Don't short me, Andrew. Don't short me. Don't short me. 6'11". Actually, you know what? You know what? Hey, listen. I'm actually 6'11" and a little bit in bare feet. So, you know what I mean? Don't short me now.
6'11" comes walking down the hallway. Yeah. Forgive me, Micah. No technical fouls. Yeah. 6'11" comes walking down the hallway. What does that do to a kid? They must get used to you now, but
yeah,
when they first see you, they must be like, what the?
So, you know, so I'll tell you what. So it's actually pretty ironic. The school that I work in is William Carter Elementary School. So I don't know how long you've been in the area, you know, in Orange County. So William Carter was the principal of this school. I actually attended this school for 2 years. I moved to Middletown in third grade. I went to a different school for third and fourth grade, and then fifth and sixth grade, it was called Mechanicstown Elementary School back then. So Mr. Carter was about 6'5". And in my eyes, this was the biggest person, you know, it was the tallest person I've ever seen in my life. He was older. He was serious. He always walked around with what seemed like a scowl. So when he smiled, it was kind of odd, like, what's happening to your face kind of deal. You know what I mean? You know what I mean? So, you know, and I remember being intimidated just seeing him, you know. And you got to think, I'm at 10, 11, 12 years old. Like, I'm much taller than most of the teachers, most of the students. Like, I'm probably the tallest one in the school, aside from my sister, right? You know? So, but with that, I also didn't see many kids around kind of challenging that, right? So the one thing about me is I am very, very aware of my size, right? And so, you know, the one thing that I tell parents all the time, the one thing that I make it very clear in, because it comes up. When I interview places, it comes up. I did not spend X amount of thousands of dollars to walk around and just try to scare your child into acting appropriately. You know what I mean? So I do think that it helps in certain situations. Sure. But if you're in education now and within the past, I don't know, you know, 10-ish years, you know that there's not really too much that scares these kids the way it used to. So even my size walking down the hallway, they're not really looking at me like, oh, who is this? You know, so I'm very aware of my size. So I, you know, I try to be as gentle as I can. I try to talk softly. I rarely yell. I get down to where they are. I never stand over top of people. Because for a kid, especially a kindergartner, you know, think, you know, it's an elementary school. So I'm dealing with K-5. So with a kindergartner who's brand new to school, just emotional wreck because they're missing their mom. They're not used to the day, whatever variety of reasons. I'm not going to come in now and be like, stop all that crying. You know what I mean? Like this ominous kind of thing. Like I'm very, very aware of that. And I make sure that I take all the right steps because, you know, I do want in the future, the next time you see me coming down the hallway, I want you to run up to me and give me a hug, give me a high five. Give me, you know, I'm always in the hallway. I'm greeting kids, fist bumps, high fives, kids out of nowhere run up and hug me all the time. You know, all these things. And that's what I would like. You know what I mean? And the kindergartners are usually they make me aware. They say, wow, you're big. But after that, it's kind of, hi, Mr. Brent. You know what I mean? Like they just kind of, they, you know, they're less concerned about it than like the fourth and fifth graders. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Beautiful and well said, Micah. But that 6'11" and change. Don't
show me.
Seven and change. It's a lifetime of hoops, Micah.
Yeah.
Five of basketball, certainly high school, Division I at UMass, professionally in multiple countries.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about how basketball has impacted your life.
Well, you know, I think it was kind of the first thing that, you know, I mean, it started out just for like a love. I mean, I can't really, and I know I sent the link to my mom, so I know she's watching.
Yeah, mom.
Mrs. Brand, shout out. You know, I don't really remember, the first time that I went to go play basketball, but I have this just memory of it. As long as I can remember, I've just enjoyed basketball. There was something about that and the ball and the hoop that was just, you know, I loved it. You know, we used to live up in Sullivan County in Liberty, New York. And my mom would take me to the high school. You know, she'd give me a nickel for every time I made a shot. You know what I mean? I tried to pull that back out when I hit like 15, 16, but she wasn't trying to hear it. You know what I mean? She was like, I don't get paid that much. You know what I mean? So, you know, I don't know. There was always something about that. But, you know, I think once I got to a certain point, probably, you know, when I was, you know, 9, 10, 11, and, you know, there's, you know, the rec teams or CYO teams or YMCA, things like that, where it's like you start to practice, you start to, you know, do skill development. I think that was really the first introduction to me of something to kind of being like, being very dedicated and a focus. Like, all right, I'm here for this. And let's, you know, let's really do this. You know what I mean? To kind of not let my mind wander, things like that. It was kind of one of the first things that really kind of made me aware of the importance of focusing on a task was probably basketball.
Interesting. And it's taken you literally around the world.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did that love enhance when you got to UMass? Did it enhance as you played professionally, or did it become more of a job at that point?
You know, it every level, and it's the same with anything, right? It's the same with education. It's the same with you with refereeing. It's the same, like, no matter what the profession is, no matter what the arena is, every level comes more pressures, right? To do that as you move up. But you know, I think it was more of a love that grew because, like, you see, like, wow. With this amount of work and effort, like, boom, look where it got me. And then you do it again, and you do it again. And you just kind of see, like, man. And then you kind of start to think, wow, where can this take me? Like, how far can this go? You know what I mean? And I think that's that. So it was really more of a love. You know, overseas, there's, you know, there's pressure. You know, it's a job. You're getting paid to do it. You know, you're getting paid to do it. And it's not like the like the American leagues, like the NBA or even like the G League. When I was doing it, it was the D League. But you know, there's a lot more pressure of performance. But I think the love for it kind of takes over that. Really the only places that I didn't perform well were places that I didn't enjoy my life off the floor. You know what I mean? Like I just, whatever the area I was in, maybe my teammates, that just anything that I was like, I don't really like it here. And do I want to spend the next however many months in this particular place? And that might've been one or two places over the course of 10 years. You know what I mean? You know, for the most part, it was, you know, it was the love that kept me going and performing, you know, which allowed me to raise levels and, you know, more financial opportunities, you know, depending on where I went to play.
Yeah. And we got a number of people watching live. Certainly jump in the program, say hello. Larry Dakes here. Not only is your mom watching, Micah, my mom says hello there. She's a big Hoops fan. Micah, again, 10 years professionally, 4 years mm-hmm. Division I, UMass. What are some takeaways? What are some things now that are still with you as a dad, as a husband, and certainly an educator now, your impact on others? What are some lessons from the floor that you're taking with you?
You know, definitely the patience. I think that's really where I got my patience from, was with basketball. There's a lot of pressure to to be the best kind of early, you know, and I think anybody who knows me and knew me from young, you know, I think maybe my mom maybe might tell a different story because she would talk to her, you know, her and my dad would talk to some coaches and they'd be like, oh, you know, he's pretty good or this or that. But in your own mind, I don't think you're ever as good necessarily as other people think you are. And so I think that there is, you know, there's always this pressure to kind of be, you know, get it. But I don't know. It was just always, I've always just had this very natural kind of just kind of chip away at it kind of attitude, like little step by step. I'm a very foundational person by nature. You know, you can't build a house if you don't got the foundation in the ground. You can't, you know what I mean? So there's nothing that you can do if you don't get these things kind of down here solidified. So I think that's the biggest thing, is because that spilled over into my parenting, that spilled over into my schooling, that spilled over into my work. Just, you know, being patient in a variety of situations, understanding that sometimes you just have to sit back, you have to look, you have to see what's happening, you have to observe it, you have to evaluate it, and then you have to strategize for it. And I think that's kind of the biggest thing. I coaches used to get on me a lot. I was never a get in the game and just kind of make things happen type of player. You know, I would generally have a slow start because I'm sitting there and I'm like, all right, you know, I'm looking, I'm reading, I'm seeing what's happening, I'm evaluating this, and then boom, I take off, you know. And I think that really helps me in my professional life because, you know, it's the same thing with the students that you work with. You can't just go in there and try to fix the situation because you don't know this child. You don't know how they react to certain things. You don't know, you know, what you think is a crisis. I may not think is a crisis, but I can't approach it like, oh, this isn't a big deal, because to you it is, obviously, and you know, and vice versa. So I think that there are a lot of things that you have to just, you have to observe it, you have to evaluate it, and you have to strategize for it. And then once you get those things in order, the next time there are some steps that you can skip. And I think that's probably the biggest thing that I took from all my years of playing at the different levels, from local to national AAU to, you know, to college to overseas. I think is really one of the most important things. Like, you can't just kind of fast track everything. You can't always necessarily outright plan for everything. Things are going to come, roadblocks are going to happen. You're going to have to learn how to shift and move to be able to get around and, you know, and get some things going.
What a great answer. I think kids today need to hear that answer, Micah, who's been there and done that. Micah, I can remember exactly where I was, where I kind of said, I think I've had enough of refereeing. I think I'm going to do something different. I remember exactly.
Yeah, I do too.
That's the question. Did that happen? Like, were you overseas somewhere? Said, this is it. I know your wife came and joined you for a period of time. But was it one moment, or was it, you know, over time that you said, hey, I'm going to go back to the States. I'm done playing.
You know,
tell me about
that. So I'll tell you what, and actually, it actually all worked out perfectly. That moment came, I was in Canada. So I am a Canadian citizen also. I have a dual citizenship in Canada. Again, shout out to Mama Brand, because she was, so fun fact, her dad played in like the first professional league in Canada. So he he played basketball at Seton Hall. And then he played for, you know, back then it was kind of like he worked for a business and that guy wanted to start a basketball league and he played for him. So my mom, her twin sister, and her younger brother were all born up there. So just by that, I was able to get my citizenship. So
excellent.
So I went to Canada as a local. You know, I don't know if a lot of people know, overseas teams have a cap on foreign players that they can have. Some have unlimited, some have one, some have two, whatever. So I was able to go to Canada and play as a local, which allowed them to have more foreigners. You know what I mean? Because I didn't count as an American. I counted as a Canadian. So I was up there and, you know, I kind of been a little bit the last, you know, half a year. I was coming off. I tore my meniscus at the end of the season previous. That was the first major injury I ever dealt with, you know, and, you know, I had the surgery. I was fully recovered. I was fine. But, you know, I kind of got up there and everything wasn't exactly feeling the same. I was unfortunately going through some things here personally that always had my mind off and this and that. And then I remember it was January 14th. It was January 14th. And I do remember the day because it was just before my, so I have four children. I have my oldest who was 20. And then from a previous relationship, and then with my wife, Danielle, we have 11. We have Noelle, Joshua, and Naomi. So Noelle was just about to be one. She was just, her birthday is January 17th. She was just about to be one. So essentially my basketball career spanned the first 10 years of my oldest daughter's life. Like she was born July 2003. My first job was September 2003.
Wow.
You know what I mean? So from right there, I left, you know. So, you know, luckily I missed some birthdays. There were a lot that I was able to get, that I was able to be home because her birthday's in the summertime. As I got better, was able to make more money, I had more opportunity to not have to play all year long. So in the summer times, I could be home. I was blessed in that regard. But I'm sitting there. We're kind of there's things weighing on my mind. There's this and that, and I'm sitting there and I'm like, do I really want to like am I about to miss like another first for like I've had 10 years doing this. You know, I've had 10 years doing this. Am I really about to miss like another major first now for my, you know, for my next child? And I'm sitting there and I'm like, nope. And I got my car and I drove home.
I did. Wow. And you made it home for Naomi's first birthday.
For Noelle's first birthday. I got my car and I drove home. It was about 16 hours. And I was like, I'm all set. You know, I literally have traveled the world, seen places I never thought I'd been. They paid me to do it. I got a passport full of stamps. And I'm like, at this point, I felt like it was just kind of getting greedy a little bit. You know what I mean? I don't know. Like, I still loved the game. The same preparation wasn't necessarily there. But I'd always said, like, people said, oh, when would you stop playing? My answer literally was always when I just feel like being home more than I feel like being away. And I was sitting there in my apartment, and I'm just like, I just want to go home. And I played one more game. Fun fact, I was ejected from my final professional basketball game. I had no lie to you, Andrew. Nobody, because you know what? Unfortunately, there were some, like I said, there were some things on my mind anyway, personally, that just had me, that was all kind of part of it. I was upset about some things. I was this and that. I was ejected from my final professional game in the first half.
I forgive you, Michael.
You know, I played that game. I went and I talked to the GM after the game, and I was like, listen, I was like, I'm going to go home. I went home. I packed up. I slept for a few hours. I got up in the middle of the night and got my car and I drove home.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, we're back there. We're glad to have you back here. I know Middletown is glad to have you back.
Got that bell back, baby. I'm sorry. Was that too soon? Was that too soon? Hey, I heard in the opening thing, I heard you talk about the rivalry. People don't know. How many years is it? How many?
All the time.
110. Is it 110 now? More than that? Century plus long rivalry, high school football. You know, for that bell, it's crazy.
Middletown, Port Jervis, New York, absolutely. Yeah. But you're home, back in your hometown. Yeah. You're working in the schools, and you're coaching right in your local schools. What does that mean to you, Micah, to have both these positions in your hometown?
You know, it's great. I think that a big part of success is proximity and familiarity. Like, you know, me being here, a lot of people knowing me. I'll tell you what, when I first stopped playing, I thought natural progression, I'll get into coaching. And I can't tell you how many resumes and things I said, like, I didn't realize like the effort and the energy that had to go into the networking and the this and that. And so that's why I didn't really pursue it when I first stopped playing. But just because I knew, you know, Coach Ricard, who you know very well is the men's coach at SUNY Orange, like when he kind of went back on, I'd actually just reached out to him to just say, hey, congratulations, heard you back on. And he said, hey, do you want to come coach with me? And that's how I got into like coaching like that. And then, you know, after COVID, when the women's coach stepped down, I was able to do that. But, you know, these are opportunities that because of, you know, my reputation where I live, I'm able to do that. Like I said, working in the school that I went to, you know, walking through the hallways and being like, oh, that was my classroom. This was, you know, just seeing all these things, you know, bringing back all these memories of what it was like to be a student in this school in Middletown, New York. You know, there's a lot of things that really, really come that were really, really a blessing that allowed me to kind of be and you know, come back and be able to serve this community in the capacity that I do. You know, I work with a couple of nonprofit things. There's an organization called Middletown Youth Sports that my son is a part of that I help out with. You know, there's just a lot of things that I think the opportunity came because I am from here, like, you know, and people want to see that the people who are from here have been raised here, that they want to come back and, you know, and give into this. You know, a lot of people really kind of sometimes think that, oh, I've been here all my life and they haven't done any of these things. But it's like, that feels a little bit different when it's kind of a choice. You know, I was able to get out and go around and be around. And then, you know, when I met my wife and, you know, obviously, you know, she's from here also. And, you know, we kind of moved back here. She was already established, you know, working over there in Port with you. And so I was like, you know what, I had my time. Like, this is her time. Let her do this stuff. And I'll just kind of be, and we'll be here. And we just kind of grew it from here. You know, I can't say we planned it, but, you know, everything kind of works out the way it's supposed to, I feel like. And for this season of our life, we're just supposed to be here and just sowing back into this community, you know, letting our kids raise up in it and, you know, see what happens from there.
Beautiful story. Beautiful. I forgive you for wearing blue on the show. I still love you, but you're back in Middletown, and it is a beautiful story. If you're watching live, jump in. Marie Brand sends her love, Micah. And Micah, you're coaching on the women's side now. You've played men's basketball at the highest levels, and you're coaching on the women's side. Tell me about that. What did you have to do anything different? Do you work with the girls differently than you would young men? Tell me about that change in your role.
So I think, you know, I think I hyped myself up to think that it was going to be a lot different. But I'll tell you the best advice I got was from the former women's coach. His name is John Lauro, very decorated coach in the state of New York high school girls basketball, coached at West Point, coached at Pace. I believe he's in the High School Basketball Hall of Fame, like New York for coaches. Yeah. You know, I reached out to him when I first said, the best advice I ever got. He said, don't treat them like girls, treat them like basketball players. Is like, if you whatever you expect as a basketball coach, expect it. If they choose to be here and be on this team, this is the expectation. And that was probably the best advice I got, because, you know, when you have serious athletes that they're serious about their respective sport, you know, the particulars of each person are kind of notwithstanding. Like, I've seen the biggest, strongest, most athletic boys cry because they got yelled at, and I've seen the tiniest little girl suck it up, chest out, and get back out and do it again. So it's like that part, you know, for, oh, this is more sensitive, but I haven't really, really found that when it comes to being with serious athletes. My first team that I had on the women's side was fresh out of COVID. I had 8 players and 5 had never played basketball. That was a different approach. That was a different approach. I'll tell you that was definitely that was a different approach. I'll leave it at that. You know, but like I said before, I'm not a yeller. I'm very even keel with my own emotions. I'm never too high or too low for too long, I should say. obviously everybody gets high and low, but I'm never too high or too low for any really extended amount of time. I will never disrespect a player. I'm not yelling and cursing and, you know, all that kind of stuff anyway. So that's men or women. And that's just my own personality, you know, in general. And that, you know, translates to the floor. So after that, treat them like basketball players. You know, you treat them like basketball players. And the skill development part, that can come. You can always make somebody better, you know. But it's if you have somebody that's serious about getting better, it's gonna naturally happen. If they come to work every day, then it's going to happen.
Mike, it's a competitive game. Obviously, we want to win at most every level. The little kids, not so much, but people want to win. But what would you say your role as coach is? Are you trying to get them to play at a Division II, a Division I, Division III school? Are you trying to have them win? Are you trying to have them to get their degree? What's the goal?
So, I mean, obviously the main is probably, you know, first and foremost, getting the degree. So, you know, it's a JUCO, so it's a 2-year school. So, you know, if you can leave here with your, you know, with as many credits as possible, it's just going to make it better for you as you transfer out, because you're going to have to go somewhere else to finish, you know, to finish school completely. I think that, you know, my biggest thing is just to really make this really, and I don't know if this is a cliche answer, but just really make them more the most well-rounded they can be. Because now if you come in and tell me this is your aspirations, I'm going to tell you what it takes to get there, and then the rest is up to you. I'll do my part in that, and you have to do your part in that. So I can never have a goal of saying I'm getting all my players scholarships, because I don't know if that's what they want. Some people might be coming to, they, you know, especially with JUCO, it's a little bit different than like going directly to a 4-year school at the D3, D2, D1 level, is that some people just, they understand that where they are, this is another opportunity to play past high school. And then their story in basketball is probably, you know, might be done. Other people might be using it as a stepping stone. I have found men compared to women at JUCO is that the men are more likely using it as a stepping stone for a higher level, where the women's side I can't speak for all, obviously, here in this area, in the Orange County area, Orange County, Sullivan County area, they're using it more as I love to play. I have an opportunity to play here. I'm going to play hard. I'm going to do what I have to do for academics. And then we'll see kind of what happens after that. You know, where the guys are very kind of singular focused on, I'm going to use this to get over there, you know, in the sport. So, you know, really just being well-rounded, like understanding that please get your degree, come here and work every day. You know, we get out, I do a lot of community service stuff, you know, just letting them see that, you know, you got to support if you want to get support. So, and after that, the rest is up to you.
Again, kudos to you coming back, Micah, in your community, teaching these girls modeling.
It's awesome. It's awesome.
Let's talk a little bit about you. We joked, you know, your children upstairs, your wife taking care of baths and showers and homework right now. You're working during the day. You're running to the gym. How does Micah Brand make time for Micah Brand?
Well, you know, it's weird. And this is one of the biggest perks about my job, is that every day is so wildly different. I could have a day that I am all over the place with behaviors, and I can have a day that I don't get one phone, that I don't get one radio call. So, you know, I'm very careful. I'm very intentional about my downtime. Sometimes, to my wife's chagrin, but I need some. Sometimes you really need to do nothing. I can last throughout the night a little longer. So if I really need to like decompress when everybody goes to sleep, I'll stay up a little bit longer. You know, just I don't know. Just it's kind of different things. I get my gym time when I can. When I'm at work, I actually shoot a lot. I go in the gym and I shoot a lot because, you know, I have a radio. So, and I make the running joke in the building that I started, as long as I have my radio, I'm working. Doesn't matter where I am. As long as I have my radio, I'm working. If it's all the way up, I can hear it. If there's no gym class going on right now, I'll go in there, I'll grab a ball, I'll just shoot, you know, and that kind of stuff just, you know, but that's why I can still take meal money for foul shots. You know what I mean? Because I keep that thing sharp, Andrew. I keep that thing sharp. You know, and I think that that's really, really important. And unfortunately, there are a lot of people who don't necessarily have that time or are unable to find the time. you know, it is, it's not always easy. Sometimes you kind of, you feel like, man, where did they go? And before you know it, you're to sleep and you're back up again. But you have to be able to kind of find that balance. And, you know, me and my wife do a really, really good job of, you know, sharing the things. You know, I mean, I joked before that she's upstairs doing the bath time. I told her early, I will do anything and everything. Please don't make me give the children a bath. I hate it. I don't like it. I don't like leaning over the tub. It hurts my back. It's like, you know, I teach my children as early as possible how to shower themselves. they'd be like 3 years old and they're taking a shower. I'm like, good, you good? Like, I don't enjoy it. I'll clean up the kitchen. I'll do whatever. Please don't make me go in the bathroom. Please. You know, so, you know, and you know, just as far as that, like, you just have to kind of be intentional with it. And I do find some time at work to just do different things, you know. I can sit at my desk, listen to music. I read. I like the color that really relaxes me. I got coloring books and markers in my desk. It's just like, as long as that, you know, that radio goes off, I go. But in between that, it's like, you know, I can find little times to kind of decompress a little bit depending on the day.
Beautiful. Yeah. Michael, was there anything you wanted to talk about that I did not ask you about?
I don't know. I would think maybe just. You know, just making sure that people, you know, the profession, especially the education profession, you know, I feel like a very insightful look into education because my position allows me to be where the teachers are, where the admins are, where the students are, you know, and so I get a lot of, you know, kind of what each environment is going through in their own thing. And I think just, you know, imbalance kind of creates burnout, you know. And you have to be able to really make sure that the best you can, you know, keeping things in order, seeking help and assistance to do those things, whether it be at work, whether it be at home. You know, a lot of people bring home into work and then they can't focus on the work or vice versa. So, you know, I really, that's a big thing I try to do is alleviate a lot of people's, like, if I go into the office and I look at somebody doing some, so I'm like, hey, listen, let me do that. Like, if I got nothing to do, let me do that. So you can go, I know you got a million things to do. I'll do that. So you can do this. I really try to be like that support around the building for just any, you know, I go into a class, I have to teach all the time. Like, hey, do you need a 5 minute break? Do you got to go to the bathroom? Like anything, like, do you got to go to the bathroom? You got to do that out, you know, just because, I've been to that place where mentally you're just like, all right, you know, I need to stop. And for the teachers, they can't just check out. Like, they got this class, you know, especially in elementary. It's not like high school where it's high school, middle school, where you got them, you know, chunks at a time. Like, they got them all day.
All day.
They got them all day, you know. And so, you know, I really try to be like a support just for everybody. Pop into classrooms, you know, just talk to kids about things. I've kind of created a social emotional thing called dialogue circles where I go into the classrooms. And we make certain, just talk about certain topics, you know, emotions, managing emotions, making friends, comfort zone, peer prejudice. And, you know, we signed up, you know, and I did that to, number one, connect with the children, but also two, to give the teachers some time. You know, it's half hour at a time. And that half hour is big for a teacher. You know, they sit down, they can get some work done. They can, if they want to leave the room, they can leave the room. You know, it's whatever. A lot of them like to stay and join and do it, but it's a different energy, you know, when they can just kind of sit and not have to be up there and be the one that all eyes are on and that all the focus is on and all the pressure is on. You know, so I think that was that I just tried to kind of do that for everybody in the building, and, you know, and just because I understand the importance of that.
Can't end the show here, Michael. We got Marie Brand here. She's been the listener of the show. She says here, do you think that schools undervalue the importance of sports in helping kids learn to grow emotionally? Great question, Marie.
Oh, here she comes. Hello, Uncle Michael. That's actually my niece, too. Yeah. So I don't think they undervalue. I think they put a different kind of pressure. I think they put a lot of value on it, but not for the emotional learning of it. I think that there's a big view. I mean, you've seen it like this, how it's grown. So oh, yeah. Considerably in the last, you know, 5 years with AAU.
On TV and, now.
Oh my, you know, AAU's on TV, like, you know, just all these different avenues. But I don't think it's to, you know, the focus has really gotten away from teaching, you know, fundamental values of teamwork, of responsibility, of communication, of commitment, all, you know, all these things, which I think are really, really important for the kids to do. And I think, you know, people from our generation before, that's really what they were able to get out of it. But now I think that that's really, really missing, because from such a young age, kids are, they're being forced to just like be elite at this whatever sport this is, and so they're missing they're not allowed to like grow the love and the you know, just the curiosity of the game and this and that. It's just like, no, you know, there's this one focus of you have to be great and let's go. You know, you got 6-year-olds out training 4 a.m. and 7 hours a day. And I, like, it's, that's, you know, that's too much. People always ask about my son. It's like, oh, are you going to make him play basketball? I was like, why would I make him play basketball? You know what I mean? Like, you know, why? Like, he can do whatever he does, baseball, soccer, wrestling, you know, flag football, basketball. He's in a tumbling class right now. Like, he can do whatever he can do. Whatever he does, he can do that. You know what I mean? Whatever makes him go, you know, he's going to do something. he's not just going to sit around, but he's going to do something. But like, you know, you just go do it. And I think that's, you know, the biggest thing. There's a big value of it, but I think the value is shifting and it's becoming a little bit more, you know, status than the learning of it.
Yeah, so much with the video and the phone.
Yeah. It's like I didn't work out unless I posted on social media. It's like, exactly. You know.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's a lot.
Good question, Marie. Thanks for being an active listener. And there's a ton of people watching, Micah. And that's a tribute to you and your family. But let's get to rapid fire, Micah. This is us coming down the stretch.
All right, last meeting
time out. No tech tonight. Are you ready?
All right, let's go.
Out of the huddle. Let's go. Last book you read.
Actually yours. The hardware joint. Yeah. It's actually yours. Yeah.
There you go. Last movie you saw.
Gran Turismo in the IMAX.
Okay.
Really good movie.
Last concert.
NF. I took my son to an NF concert in July in the summertime.
Favorite dish. You've been around the world. You've eaten food from everywhere. Mm-hmm. Favorite dish.
Mama Brand's Baked Ziti, baby. Let's do it.
On January 1st, I will be glad that I fill in the blank.
Have the day off.
Get a little rest.
Yeah.
The best coaches are the best because fill in the blank.
They observe and strategize.
A pet peeve, other than giving a bath to little ones, a pet peeve.
Loudness, just extreme loudness. I don't like extreme loudness from people.
At 8 a.m. on Saturday morning, I feel fill in the blank.
Energized.
Nice. You sleeping in on the weekends? Are you up?
Absolutely not. My house is up by like 7:30, man. Everybody. Honestly, you can even, that's why I've always been a morning person. I was like, you know, I'm up and let's get it done. I do it early so I can sit down later.
I love it. Best takeaway from this show for our guests.
I think you got to take your time. You got to take your time, see the bigger picture, be patient. You know, things are going to fall into place if you are prepared. What's that quote? Opportunity is when luck meets preparation, or preparation, something like, you know what I mean? Like, you do what you got to do, you know, you take the right steps and there's going to be an opportunity for you somewhere. And you'll be ready when it comes.
Something about Micah Brand that people do not know about.
Some about me that I did not know. I used to play the piano and the saxophone.
Size foot.
16 and a half.
Oh my god.
16.
All right, this is a new section of the program. New section. You gotta pick one.
Okay.
You ready?
Yeah.
Cheeseburger or taco?
Burger. Cheeseburger.
Long walk or gym workout?
Gym. Got to get there, throw some heavy stuff around.
Beach or lake?
Pool.
Pool. Add that. Book or audio book?
Book.
Series or movie?
Ooh. Movie. Because I can get popcorn.
Winter or summer?
Oh, that's even worse. I guess summer.
And he's a basketball guy.
Well, you know what? You know, I said... Because you can, I do like to be outside. I do like to be outside, but man, it gets hot in the summertime. And I don't do well in the heat.
College or pro hoops?
You know, more and more pro hoops without the drama. I watch the game. I don't watch the shows.
A dunk or a three?
Dunk, easy.
Surviving or thriving?
I think that's a little bit of both, depending on the day. A little of both, depending on the day. Yeah.
Honest answer there, Coach. I appreciate you. Micah, how can people get in touch with you? How can they learn more? How can they follow SUNY Women's Orange Basketball?
Well, on Instagram, we're SUNY Orange Women's Basketball. On Twitter, we are SUNY Orange Women's Basketball. You know, if you want to email me, my name is micah.brand@sunyorange.edu. You know, I'm always down to talk basketball, down to talk just different things about education and modification and social emotional learning. I'm always down to learn more, down to just have those kind of conversations. I love them.
Micah, this has been fantastic. We could have
talked for
3 hours. but I love to end with a quote. You got a quote? You got something that you live by?
Keep it simple and keep it moving.
Oh, God. Yeah.
I'm trying to trademark that.
Yeah, I like it. Keep it moving. And we're going to keep it moving here. Micah, again, a number of people watching live. Thank you for the comments here.
I appreciate it, Andrew. Yeah.
Shout out. Micah, this has been great. I wish you a great season and certainly happy to connect with you.
Definitely, man. I appreciate the opportunity, man. Thanks for the time.
Yeah. And a shout out to your wife. She is an amazing educator, amazing person. Yeah.
How long did you guys work together? You guys were together how long?
Long time.
I don't know.
She kept leaving and coming back.
That might have been my fault. That might have been a little bit of, I'll take some responsibility for that.
I was one of the ones that told her she should go. It was a chance of a lifetime.
Yeah.
Travel with Micah Brand around the world. Absolutely. I wanted to go.
I know.
Well, everybody, this is Micah Brand. Certainly follow Women's Hoops at SUNY Orange. Micah, you're doing great work. And
I appreciate it.
Happy to have you here in the camp.
Appreciate it, man. Keep doing what you're doing too, man. Good luck with the new position over there. And, man, I love watching these. And just keep going. Keep connecting. Keep spreading the energy, man. Oh, yeah.
Keep it simple. Keep it moving. Oh, yeah. We are going to sign off on this episode. Micah, stay on the line for a sec.
Okay.
If I could help you in any way, anybody, at Andrew Murata 21. Signing off here on this episode. And again, shout out to Micah Brand and his family. Peace out, Micah. We will talk soon.
All right.